This is White Sox Weekly, your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now, here's your host, Jeff Mellor.
Good afternoon. Happy Saturday, November 15th, and it has been an interesting offseason already, in my opinion. The general manager's meetings took place in Las Vegas this week. They have since concluded. Jesse Rogers, ESPN MLB Insider, was there taking it all in. He's going to join me here in a little bit. We'll also let you hear from White Sox brand new hitting coach Derek Showman later in the show, and if we have time, Hagen Smith as well. But as I mentioned, the general manager's meetings took place in Las Vegas this past week, and Chris Getz addressed the White Sox in 2026, some of the plans, and how busy the team might be in free agency.
Whether it be a Colson Montgomery, a Kyle Teal, some of these players on the roster, Shane Smith, and some of these young arms, you know, they've earned the right to continue to play at the major league level because they can be productive major league players that can help us win. But that doesn't mean that there aren't going to be opportunities to get into free agency and find, you know, players that are going to add to this group. I mean, but just like any offseason, there are some areas that you need to focus on more than others. And so, you know, you set your sights on certain players. And then, you know, there's also, you know, trades that could happen that, you know, maybe you're repurposing a player to help. You know, you find a gain in another area that needs a boost. So, I think foundationally, I feel like we're in a decent spot. But without question, we want to take a step forward. You know, the biggest step forward is still going to be much more dependent on the continued development of these young players. But with that being said, that doesn't mean that there aren't going to be players that we're able to sign in free agency aren't going to help as a win.
Okay, identify the couple areas that you're looking at in general.
Well, you know, we started pitching, which is a common theme everywhere, and you know, we've been able to create a decent amount of depth, and knock on wood, because, you know, that can change quickly. But, you know, to be able to navigate a full season, the amount of starts that you need out of your starters and innings, you know, you want to protect some of these young arms. You know, you got Hagen Smith and Noah Schultz that are getting closer. But you don't want to be too reliant and dependent on those innings necessarily, because you want to bring them up when it's appropriate for them. We feel like they can really be impactful. You know, our corner outfield, it was an area of weakness that you know, there's different ways to shape value there, whether to be on the defensive side and certainly offensive or base running. So, you know, you look at our bullpen. When Grant Taylor came up, you know, we had a better chance to finish off games. And it wasn't just because of Grant's outings. It was able to slide certain arms in different situations and balance out the bullpen a little bit more. So, but that doesn't mean that we can't strengthen that. Volatility of bullpens is one of the hardest things. It is one of the hardest things to predict in baseball. I think the industry just hasn't really been able to solve that one or understand that one enough. So we're gonna look to add to that group too.
So there you go, White Sox general manager Chris Getz meeting with the media. You heard Jesse Rogers there ask a follow-up question about some of the needs that the team believes they need to address in free agency, starting pitching and corner outfield, the two spots that Getz mentioned in particular. Of course, he also referenced Grant Taylor and how he helped improve the bullpen once he came up. And that is something that has been a question that has been asked multiple times of Chris Getz. And even though he and the organization have never ruled out the idea of Grant Taylor eventually transitioning back to a starting role at some point in his career, everything seems to point to Grant Taylor coming out of the bullpen yet again. So if you were envisioning some type of Garrett Crochet type replication, that's not going to be on the docket. At least doesn't sound like, at least early in the off season here for Grant Taylor, and he was very dominant at times coming out of the bullpen. So he will hopefully help fix some of the bullpen issues that the White Sox had. He did indeed help fix some of the issues when he eventually arrived at the major league level. So I think that's some part of the hope for the bullpen improvement. And then again, starting pitching, though, they're probably going to need yet again another veteran arm, somebody like a Martin Perez or maybe even somebody like an Adrian Hauser. The innings they provided in the veteran leadership. So that's worth keeping an eye on. And I would think that the White Sox will be looking for a veteran who they can plug in and count on for some innings. And hey, I wouldn't rule out the possibility of a reunion with both Martin Perez and Adrian Hauser. I think it would be something that both players might be interested in. And I think the White Sox had a lot of success with both players. So if they could find a middle ground in terms of numbers, I could see both those players being interesting possibilities as veterans to plug into the starting rotation. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. White Sox fans, get access to the best seats at the best value and lock in a 2026 ticket plan today. Be here for the biggest matchups, exciting new promotions, and opening day on Thursday, April 2nd. Against the AL champion Toronto Blue Jays, by the way. Plus, enjoy flexible payment plans, savings on single games, and more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2026. When we come back, we will delve deeper into the GM meetings and also tackle some of the MLB awards that were handed out this past week with Jesse Rogers, who was in Las Vegas asking questions, as you heard right there, of Chris Getz. We'll do that next, right here on White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
We are talking White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly.
If you missed the show, we put the podcast up on the ESPN Chicago app. So listen on your time.
White Sox Weekly. ESPN Chicago. Chicago's home for sports.
Hey, Sox fans, sign up to become a White Sox insider and get special offers, single game, ticket presales, and other exciting Sox content delivered free to your inbox. Visit whitesox.com/insider today. I'm Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly. Hope you're having a fabulous Saturday today. And as you, we just played for you Chris Getz from the general manager's meetings in Las Vegas this past week, as you heard Jesse Rogers pepper him with some questions. And of course, my next guest is the ESPN MLB insider, Jesse Rogers, who was in attendance for those meetings. Before I ask you a little bit about the White Sox, Jesse, I haven't had a chance to talk to you since the World Series concluded. What a magnificent seven-game series it was. You had the Dodgers repeating. You had the Toronto Blue Jays bring them to the brink. And oh my goodness, what drama that unfolded in almost every game. What was your thought about what you saw, where it maybe landed amongst some of the all-time best World Series, the obviously rating bonanza that we saw, and maybe just what some of the reaction was like from some of the baseball higher-ups that you were talking with this past week at the GM meetings?
Yeah, no, everybody loved it. I mean, I think it had a little bit of everything, right? You had that great starting pitching on the Dodgers side. You had this great sort of lengthy offense by the Blue Jays. You had the stars come out in certain moments. You had role players like Ernie Clement's a starter, but, you know, isn't that well known, having an incredible series. And so it's just a little bit of everything. I also think that, you know, maybe we're seeing the new rules really taking, having an impact on teams. You know, the Blue Jays make a lot of contact. The Brewers had the best record in the league making a lot of contact. Like, I think we're slowly but surely seeing a little bit of a transformation in the game that didn't necessarily happen overnight with the new rules, but is starting to impact it more and more. Now throw in the pitch clock, which means the game is moving quicker, a little bit more contact seemingly. Now, there were other games where there were a lot of strikeouts. I get you're still going to have that. But it just felt like it was dramatic from start to finish and had a little bit of everything. So happy there's no ghost runner in the playoffs, because I'm okay with an 18 inning game in October, maybe not in June, but in October. So that was incredible to be at. So that's the way I look at it. It had a little bit of everything, but I think it's not just a coincidence. I think the new rules have kind of lend itself for more of these kinds of series and games. Base running obviously changing over the last few years as well. So throw that in also. So yeah, it was great. You're not always going to get it that well, but in terms of drama and different things happening, but it was cool to see. And I think it was probably the best one I've been to.
When I think back to the World Series, Jesse, too, something that stood out to me as I was reflecting upon what I had watched this past week or so is that everybody will laud and praise the Dodgers for all the talent that they bring to each and every game that they're playing in. But I think you have to also acknowledge, anybody who watched that series, is that the superstars that the Dodgers are loaded with, certainly they play a huge role. I think when it all was said and done, part of the reason the Dodgers were able to win that World Series was because what they were able to do on the margins. You know, you mentioned the base running, the new rules, and how they are definitely playing a role. There was so many great defensive plays that the Dodgers needed each and every one of those to win that World Series, which really stood out to me.
Yeah, they're not really known as a great defensive team, but of course any team could have a good series or a good couple moments. Obviously what they did, especially in game 7, was a huge, huge factor. I like the move, the moves Dave Roberts made, just the little stuff, bringing the infield in, pushing them back, all that stuff on defensive replacements late in the game. Yeah, it was great. But remember, they're also able to, you know, and this is where payroll comes into it as well. They're able to slow play their pitching staff all season. You know, Snell didn't have to pitch that much. Otani didn't have to pitch that much. They're able to rest guys in general and still make the postseason. Not every team can do that. So, you know, this payroll inequity that we have in baseball is going to rear its ugly head more and more as we head to the end of the labor agreement.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Unfortunately, that is something that we'll worry about that next year, Jesse.
Yeah, exactly.
This year, we've got at least one more year of labor peace and some baseball to look forward to. The awards were released this past week, and for anybody who did not catch, Aaron Judge edged Cal Raleigh. I think that was the one vote that people were curious which way it would end up going. Shohei Ohtani became a 4-time unanimous MVP as he won his second straight with the Dodgers in only 2 seasons with them. We saw Paul Skenes win the NL Cy Young, and Tarek Skubal won the AL Cy Young. And I guess my question in regards to some of those awards is, did any of those surprise you, or what was the most surprising thing in regards to what you saw from the awards this past week?
Yeah, so 2 things did surprise me. Obviously, one, you know, not shocking, but just surprising. I thought Cal Raleigh was going to win. Now, of course, you can make the case for Judge, and you can't be like, oh, my God, how did Judge win it? Like, you can't go like that. Mm-hmm. But a switch-hitting catcher that hit 60 home runs in Seattle, by the way, not exactly a hitter-friendly ballpark. I mean, if you can't win it with those numbers in that year, you're never going to win it. And I get how good Judge is. I mean, I'm in the media, so I understand the sort of East Coast bias that can happen sometimes, and there's some truth to it. Maybe that was the difference here because it was a close vote. So, yeah, I was surprised Cal Raleigh didn't win it. I thought he overtook Judge, you know, throughout the month of September, to be honest. Switch hitting catcher hitting 60 home runs, I don't know how you don't win the MVP. So I was surprised by that. But in terms of, like, the biggest kind of shocker, and this is not a big deal because it's rookie of the year and we don't think about it, but I thought Cade Horton should have been a little bit closer to Drake Baldwin in the National League. Like, I was surprised Drake Baldwin won it that easily. And I think a lot of our listeners may not know who Drake Baldwin is. Like, you know, it was an okay 19 home run year for rookie catcher. Again, impressive. But Cade Horton had a 1 ERA in the second half as a rookie. And Baldwin won it pretty easily. So, in a smaller vein, I thought that was pretty shocking to me.
I hear you there. How about this one? Let's combine 2 stories. Steven Vogt wins his second manager of the year. Meanwhile, the Guardians' Emmanuel Clase pleads not guilty to pitch rigging, which he, of course, has been involved with, and he was away from the team for a significant portion of the second half. Do you think Steven Vogt wins the AL Manager of the Year if Emmanuel Clase and that hole was not suspended during the season? I mean, it's insane that we're dealing with this, but it was interesting to me that Vogt ended up winning his second straight Manager of the Year award.
Yeah, right. He overcomes this roadblock, right?
Yeah.
That you know, with two pitchers, I have to imagine he wins it either way as long as the Guardians get in. It's not like anyone's going to look at the Guardians with Class A and say, oh my God, what a roster, and they got it. You know, like, I don't think he wins it either way as long as they got into the playoffs, which they did. But sure, it adds a little, you know, bonus to his resume, the fact that he helped them overcome something like that. So, you know, what's interesting, though, and you look at Pat Murphy and Matt Arnold in the National League, both winning back-to-back, like, mm-hmm. you do have some sort of an advantage when you're a smaller market underdog team, you know, because you're automatically overachieving if you make the postseason. So it's like, you know, Dave Roberts has a tougher, you know, hurdle to, you know, to overcome in terms of winning the Manager of the Year award. But, like, he should get credit, too. It's not easy to even make the postseason in back-to-back years. Granted, they have a ton of money in their payroll and everything like that. But I think you'd agree, like, winning Manager of the Year or GM of the Year is a lot easier in the smaller markets because you just inherently get that bonus, not having the payroll, not having the cachet in on the roster. And so I think year in and year out, you're going to see more of those sort of situations with the payroll inequality that we see in baseball. Like those small market teams are going to make it every year, and their manager is going to get a ton of credit for it. And so I to me, it's not a coincidence we're seeing the smaller market guys get rewarded in some sense, both Milwaukee and in Cleveland.
No doubt about it. Jesse Rogers joining me here on White Sox Weekly. Definitely the expectations play a role in determining how much credit you end up getting. Another award, the American League Rookie of the Year, went to Nick Kurtz. He was the unanimous choice. He certainly earned it. Colson Montgomery, though, does end up finishing fifth. He did pick up a second-place vote. So something, you know, maybe in a different season, or had Colson Montgomery maybe been able to not struggle so much early in the season and had been able to pick up some more at-bats earlier in the year, he could have ended up finishing higher. Obviously, Nick Kurtz, it was going to be difficult to beat him, but I think the fact that Colson Montgomery does end up finishing fifth is a bright spot for White Sox fans. What were your thoughts about Kurtz winning and Colson Montgomery garnering some votes?
That was my category. I voted for AL Rookie of the Year, and I did give Colson a vote, I think maybe a fourth.
Mm-hmm.
I think a fourth-place vote. I think you get to have five votes. I think I gave him a fourth-place vote, and he was deserving of it. But I don't think he was deserving of more than that. It was kind of like a half a season. But the fact that he was even in the conversation, Jeff, let's not forget he was sent back to the Arizona, you know, to Glendale, to Arizona, to fix his swing. And he did, and comes up to the majors, and what was it, 17 home runs, right? I mean, oh my God, come on. That doesn't happen. We didn't know if Colson Montgomery was going to be a major league player 4 months ago, 5 months ago. So, it's a tremendous story, and I think the White Sox have turned around their development staff and how they view players and how they bring them up and how they work their way through the system. And I think it's been really, really a success story for him. And, you know, we're starting to see it with a few other guys that they've, you know, traded for or drafted in recent years. So I think it's huge that he's now a mainstay in the majors. Now he has to follow up, of course, because there'll be adjustments, but the fact that he even got any votes, including mine, is a minor miracle when you consider what happened coming out of spring training. He didn't make the team and then struggled down at AAA and again was sent back to Arizona. A dramatic and unorthodox move by the White Sox for a guy that wasn't injured or anything like that, and it paid off. So you got to give him and the team a lot of credit for it.
No, you know what? Kudos to you. Great point. I think sometimes I'm so in it that sometimes I forget the obvious. But I remember that day back in, I think it was late April, when Chris Getz met with the media and he mentioned, and oh, by the way, Colson Montgomery is going to go back to Arizona to work individually with Ryan Fuller. And I remember, you know, sending that report to people at the station being like, this is different.
This
is not, I'll be honest, I was like, this is not great, guys. Colson Montgomery, they're stopping his season at AAA, and he's going to work individually because you're absolutely right. He struggled so mightily to begin the season with striking out above 40% in AAA, and for him to finish the season with 21 home runs, he had more home runs in the second half than any player ever in the history of the majors who had not homered in the first half. So, you know, just a great run. So great point by you. Last thing, Jess, we played your question to Chris Getz in the opening segment about what the White Sox plans were. He mentioned, you know, if they're going to be players in the free agent market, that starting pitching and corner outfield are a couple of positions that they may need to address. Any names that you think the White Sox should be looking at as we head to free agency here?
Yeah, I wish I could be more specific for you. I really want to see more veteran presence to lead these guys. You know, Miguel Rojas, for example, is a free agent. Like, the guy that helped win the World Series. I'm not saying you're going to sign him. He's an infielder anyway. But, like, I would love to see, like, championship-caliber guy, even if he's towards the end of his career. You know, Martin Perez was a good one on the mound. Like, someone like that, but maybe even with a little bit more on his resume. Same thing in the position player base. Like, Mike Tauchman was good. I want someone with some championship-caliber vibes to him, maybe at the end of his career, because that's what this is about. I wrote about it at ESPN.com today. Their win total isn't going to be increased by anything they do this offseason, other than what their young players are doing on their own this offseason, you know, their offseason plans, because that's how they're going to win more games. The roster that ended last season is how they're going to win more games. Whoever they add this year really has to help those guys along. And again, Tauchman and Perez were good. I think they need to advance that even more with some championship caliber winning type of players. So I know fans want to see the free agents and fast forward this thing. You know, I was talking to Chaim Bloom of the Cardinals. Like, you just can't fast forward it unless you want to try to be the Mets or the Dodgers. Like, you just have to take it step by step. And it's unfortunate the Sox are in the same position they were a half decade ago. But it is what it is. And I like the idea of building this thing the right way, not trying to fast forward it, because it's just not going to work. It's not going to work. You have to sign those free agents when the team is ready to win. But in the meantime, sign some guys that can show them how to win. And so, you know, like I said, a Miguel Rojas type. I was just thinking about what team wouldn't want a guy like that who has that kind of a resume now. There's some other names. You know, Miles Michaelis could be a good fit. He's got a good resume in terms of on the mound, you know, one-year type of deal. Michael Lorenzen, another one, that could be a good fit on the mound. You know, and just try to advance the young players with some veterans along the way, some guys that have been there and done that before, which I don't know you could say that about Mike Tauchman necessarily and a couple of the other guys.
He is MLB insider, ESPN insider, Jesse Rogers, joining us here on White Sox Weekly. As always, Jess, appreciate your time, man. Thanks for carving some out for us today.
You got it, Jeff. Be well.
More to come right here on White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports. It's the home of the Chicago White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Jeff Meller back here on ESPN 1000 hanging out with you. We just talked with ESPN MLB insider Jesse Rogers about the happenings at the GM meetings and also covered some of the MLB awards that were handed out this past week. Hey, Sox fans, stay up to date on all things White Sox by following the team's official social media accounts. Don't miss a minute of the action on and off the field. Follow at White Sox on social today, where you get news alerts like, hey, the White Sox hired Derek Showman as their new hitting coach. They did that last Friday, and he met with the media. Local guy, Derek Showman, who's now 35 years old. He spent the past season as the Marlins' assistant hitting coach, and he is also a local guy, native of Glenville, Illinois, who graduated in 2008 from Glenbrook South High School, also graduated from Indiana Wesleyan University. Played his collegiate ball at the University of Illinois at Springfield. Showman also spent the 2012 through 19 seasons in both the Independent Frontier League and the American Association. So Derek Showman met with the media last week, and How about Jesse Rogers kicking off with the first question to the brand new White Sox hitting coach?
What's this like for you coming home? I mean, you were in high school when the last time the White Sox won a playoff series, which was the World Series. So what's this like for you to come full circle?
Yeah, it's special, right? Obviously, not only growing up in the northern suburbs of Chicago, but growing up a White Sox fan. And I still recall wearing all my White Sox gear that day and bringing a broom and a dustpan to school, walking around the halls with it for that World Series. I think it was what swept the Astros in 05, right? So, yeah, it's super special, man. This has always been home. I really haven't lived anywhere else. Unbelievable opportunity and super grateful for it.
Hey, Derek, congratulations. How do you kind of look at your fit between yourself, Ryan Fuller, and then Sherman Johnson too? And then Joel too, I guess, but how do you guys all kind of play off each other throughout the organization?
Yeah, great question. I think like, obviously you have to have like a lead guy and you have it by title, but I very much like to think of this as a co-op, and this is a collaborative group that's working together, all pushing in the same direction, all aligned towards whatever that North Star is. What's awesome about this group is we all have strengths, right? And we all have weaknesses. And because of that, we're going to, like, the contrast there is going to allow us to grow together and continue pushing forward in pursuit of this North Star and continue developing this offense for the White Sox. So, like, truly, we have this group that, although it is a short period of time, we have been interacting on a fairly regular basis, and the conversations have been great. I got an opportunity to spend like 3 days with them in Arizona recently, just cutting it up and kind of, you know, some touch points, some things that we want to prioritize moving forward, getting organized. That's how I like it. This is how it should be in my eyes. I think that, like, yes, I am, you know, my title, the head hitting coach, the guy that I'll roll with the punches and I'll take the credit or the blame for failures. But like, this is all of us working together in the same direction.
Speaking of the 05 White Sox, I think it was Paul Konerko who once said the hitting coaches in baseball might be the toughest position in sports. Having worked in that field a little bit, do you kind of agree with it? Because it seems like hitting coaches get the blame for the failure, but don't get the credit when the players are hitting as well.
Yeah, I mean, the players are the ones that have to go do it, right? Like, our job is to just get them as prepared as possible so they can go execute that night at first pitch until last pitch. And like, yeah, it is a tough job. I think that there's a lot of tough jobs in professional sports, period, right? I think that the hitting is just a little bit more magnified because it is, you know, as the old saying goes, like, it is an act that is revolved around failure. But our job is to mitigate how long we, you know, are in those ruts and get creative and find solutions and get back to performing. I would not trade it for anything. You know, it's a self-inflicted pain, but very much worth it.
Hey, Derek, nice to meet you. Just, you talked about how you had a lot of different roles with Schomburg. When did you start getting to the point where like hitting really became like the primary focus? And now that you are kind of in it, how did kind of experiencing a lot of different roles in a baseball team maybe, you know, affect kind of maybe your holistic approach to hitting?
Yeah, I think like I carried like all these different titles in Schomburg, but I was always super obsessed and interested, inquisitive about like the hitting space. So even when I was a bullpen catcher, I was still talk hitting with guys on that like 2012 Schomburg Boomers team. And, you know, going into some years a little bit down the road, I think I have like the title of like strength and conditioning coach. So I was like working out with guys and kind of just like loosely overseeing their stuff at the YMCA. But in those conversations, it would still go back to hitting. So even though like I carried multiple titles, maybe gave me some different responsibilities over the years, which is great for just like overall learning those spaces in the game, albeit the Frontier League, right? Still the game of baseball. A lot of those conversations came back to hitting.
And, you know, and following up on kind of what Will was talking about, the conversations you had, how did you guys kind of find alignment on, you know, both what he's trying to accomplish on a team-wide goal, but also still keeping space for you to work, you know, individually with hitters and kind of get in the weeds a bit more?
Yeah, I think like what he's asking is like, true, right, and fair. It's like when he says we got to take away or we have to hit fastballs and we need to perform against fastballs, ultimately what he's saying is we have to take something away from that guy. And as he mentioned earlier today, it's like it may not be the heater, it may be something else, but we are committed, we are convicted, we are prepared to take something away from first pitch. And then we will be ready to pivot to whatever the next thing is that we have to do. So it's like that's common goal, I think, just like from the get. And then, you know, practice harder, man. Like, we got to up the challenge points. Talk about leveling up, level up the training environments. We want to get as close to the game as possible, as much as we can. We know that in doing so, the likelihood of skill is higher to transition into the game versus us just kind of doing a lot of lower pitch pressure, like feel good stuff.
I mean, with that said, how do you view almost the role of like traditional batting practice? Would we potentially see less of it and see more machine work, you know, pregame with what you're talking about?
Yeah. Traditional batting practice in terms of just BP on the field, three groups of four, you're asking?
Right? Yeah.
Arm out there throwing BP. So exactly. I would say you can take, I think it's great. I think it has its place. And I think you can take something like that and still level it up. So maybe it's not just fastballs, right? But maybe you're going mixed. Maybe you're going one round of just spin, where you are forcing guys to have to make decisions again, all in pursuit of how do we make training environments as close to the game as possible, as much as we can, so things are more likely to transfer. Skill is more likely to transfer into in-game performance. So typical batting practice absolutely has its place. But is there a way that you can level it up? I think the answer is yes.
Hey, Derek, first off, congratulations. In general, what were some of the things that attracted you the most to this position and this opportunity?
Yeah, nice to meet you as well. So very similar, like so many parallels to Miami as far as like roster composition, like the age, super young group of guys. They made really, really big strides as an organization from the major league level all the way down to the DR. And that's a massive kudos to Ryan Fuller, you know, Joel McKeithen, the hitting coaches and PD that were here that were here last year and are still here, like very significant changes as an org. Additionally, the major league team, the second half, right, being top 10 in runs scored per game. OPS numbers were in the top half. Their chase percentage overall last year was its best. I believe it's been in the last three seasons, maybe four seasons. We saw an increase in walk. Those are all like really good signals, right? That you are heading in the right direction. You are figuring out ways to create 90s in the pursuit of scoring runs in other ways than just slug. Not saying that that's what they were chasing, but like this is an offense that has the opportunity to be multifaceted, to have multiple solutions. And I think that the work that they had already set in place last year is very similar to what we were doing in Miami. And that's exciting. That's exciting because I've seen a system like this work.
Yeah, you know, I was just going to ask about the Miami experience as well. Just what were some of those things that you learned from Miami that you can kind of take on over to this opportunity as well?
Yeah, again, like upping the training environments, practice as close to the game as possible, present as many solutions as possible for that individual, really try and avoid the identity crisis, meaning like what's the best version of you as a hitter? How do we get you to be that guy more times than not? How do we enhance that profile? And like I said, a lot of the things that they were doing last year in that second half and just like overall on the year, going back to like the swing decisions, it's very, very similar. And that stuff absolutely matters. And it lends itself to creating more 90s, to scoring runs, to winning baseball games at the major league level.
Just, speaking of Miami, you know, the press release mentioned, you know, obviously the year Kyle Stowers had, and, you know, every hitter is unique and different and their path might not be applicable. But are there broader elements of that work that you feel are indicative of what you're trying to do, you know, coming over here to the White Sox?
Yeah, I think it goes back to like finding like what that player's identity is, right? Like each guy is different from the guy next to him. And that was no different with Kyle Stowers. It was like, what do you look like and who are you as a hitter when you're at your best? You're presently not there. Here's what we see performance wise that's not allowing you to be that guy. Now, what do we do to get you back to that? What direction do we go? Kyle and I had a very real conversation in spring training early on when I started to feel that he was panicking a little bit. And I called him on an off day when he was out with his wife walking his dog. And I asked him straight up, I said, are you panicking? And he's like, no, I'm not panicking. I was like, I'm pretty sure it feels like you're panicking. And he ends up calling me back and says, I am panicking. And we met in the cage early the next morning and just giving him that freedom to be able to express himself and, you know, and say, yeah, I'm terrified right now. And I want to admit that to you and for us to go, okay, that's now that we're there, now we can get to work. That doesn't change. That's like person first mentality. And always keeping that in mind as we move forward and make adjustments to try and improve in-game performance.
I know officially you've been the hitting coach for like an hour or so, and like everybody's working with their own guys in the off season. But do you have kind of a plan already of like how you want to, you know, get in touch with people or kind of work out plans with guys even before they show up to spring training?
Yeah, I've been talking with Joel just about every single day, and Fuller as well, just getting kind of their opinion of things, or not so much opinion, just kind of like seeing where they're at in communication with guys, where they left off at the end of the year. The plan is to start, now that it's official, to start reaching out, you know, end of this week, into the next week. Just make introductions, let them know that we're available first and foremost. You know, the last thing I ever want guys to feel is it's at the end of the year and it's like, hey, great job, we'll see you in spring training in 4 months. Like, no, we're here with you. The off season's pivotal. You know, for some guys it can be make or break, but to know that we are available, we want to be a support for you during that critical time, help provide guidance, help provide feedback. That's where that'll start. And that's kind of how the conversation is going to go here by the end of this week, going into the following week.
Did you go to a ton of Sox games growing up? And have you had the chance to think about just what it's going to be like being in that home dugout there this upcoming season?
Yeah, I went to a handful growing up. And yeah, I think like when I went out to the stadium about a week and a half ago, you know, I had a moment in the dugout and you're kind of like, oh, this is happening. And it's I'm back home. But then you don't dwell on it too long because it's immediately followed up with, okay, we got to get to work. And what's next steps?
Love that the local kid comes home to coach for his favorite team growing up. The Northside White Sox fan. Love to see that. Derek Showman, the brand new White Sox hitting coach, as he met with the media today. When we come back, we will wrap up this week's edition of White Sox Weekly. We'll let you hear from Hagen Smith. Hopefully a lot to be expected from him next season. Had an up and down season last year in his first professional season, but that doesn't mean that there's still not a lot of talent in that flame-throwing left arm. We'll let you hear from the White Sox, one of the top pitching prospects in the White Sox organization, when we come back right here on ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
White Sox Weekly.
On Chicago's home for sports.
On the ESPN Chicago app, 100.3 HD2 and ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
Happy holidays, White Sox fans. Starting at just $66, get a White Sox holiday pack redeemable for more than 50 games throughout the 2026 season. To learn more and purchase, visit whitesox.com/packs. I'm Jeff Meller here on a White Sox Weekly every Saturday. Even during the offseason, we hang out with you for an hour. And wanted to bring you Hagen Smith, who met with the media last week. And Hagen Smith's season, at least during the regular portion, the regular season portion of it, was somewhat up and down. And I think probably did not necessarily live up to quite the expectations that some White Sox fans had for the highly touted left-handed pitching prospect. And probably more importantly, they did not live up to the expectations of Hagen Smith. However, Hagen Smith was dominant in fall ball as he was a member of the Glendale team for the Arizona. He participated in the Arizona Fall League and was named a member of the Fall Stars. And Hagen Smith went 5 starts, had a 2.57 ERA, and in 14 innings, he ended up striking out 21 batters. As I mentioned, that 2.57 ERA, only gave up 4 earned runs and only allowed 1 home run. Did have 6 walks, which still is something that he needs to improve upon, but that was much better than what he's been doing, at least what he did during the course of the regular season. So certainly quite a performance by Hagen Smith, and he talked about, beginning with the up and down season that he had this past year.
Being there was awesome. Great group of guys, great coaching staff. Everyone involved was awesome. I thought my year is just all right. You know, definitely went through some ups and downs, but I think just failing helped me a lot in Pro Bowl.
How did the failing help you? You hear that a lot from, you know, young players, especially highly touted players like yourself, that once, I think Colson mentioned that a little bit. How does it kind of help you when you start to fail to kind of correct things and get on the right track?
Yeah, no, just it's been helping me. I mean, just keep working on my mechanics. You know, I think just going in that first full year, just a little bit off, and then, you know, just kind of working on it after the injury. And now I feel really good where I'm at right now.
I was just wondering, you know, you mentioned the changeup earlier. Is that something for you, like you feel like you, you know, that's a big step in your effectiveness against righties particularly? Is that third pitch, particularly the changeup, coming along?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I could do it with fastball and slider, but, you know, just adding that changeup as I go up to each level, you know, I feel like it's key for me. I've been throwing it good. It feels good right now. And just for me, it's trying to, like, figure out what counts I'm going to throw it in and, you know, try to execute at the bottom part of the zone.
You mentioned kind of coming off the injury. You're right around, probably around the same amount of innings totally you threw last year. Just kind of how are you feeling at this point in the season? You know, how's the operation feeling at this point?
I feel awesome, honestly. I feel really good. I feel like I have a really good routine that keeps me feeling good, you know, after the injury, just kind of taking a step back and just looking about what I was doing wrong and what I wasn't doing. So just coming from back from that, I felt honestly really, really good every single week.
What have you felt happier about mechanically, you know, since coming off that stretch where you're both recovering, but also had a chance to work on things? Now, as you watch the ball come out, or, you know, have some of these better outings with consistent command, what are you kind of liking, what you're doing better than maybe the first half of the season?
Yeah, just being slow. You know, I talk to some of the pitching guys a lot, as for me, I feel like I'm never going fast enough, and that's not the case at all on the mound. So my body, I just got to feel really slow, and I'm not going to be slow. So that's mentally, that's where I'm at right now, and it's been helping me be more consistent in the zone, getting ahead early.
You mentioned kind of working through, you know, some struggles in the year, and Brian Bannister talked about even reaching out to you know, Matt Hobbs at Arkansas, and, you know, talking about what things have worked great in your delivery in the past. Just what is kind of working through this process of this year, and you're getting some things clicking with the White Sox. What has that kind of taught you about, like, working with them and what the process has been like?
Yeah, it's been awesome. You know, those guys are the best of the best, I think. And, you know, just being able to work with them, as especially as I was coming back from injury, you know, just when they kind of took time out of their day to come help me, which is awesome, you know. And yeah, I feel really good right now, like I said.
Hagan, something you get a lot of compliments for from, you know, evaluators and coaches is being able to kind of switch up the looks of your slider a little bit and having, like, harder and slower sliders that kind of do different things. Is that something, does that feel come along recently, or is that something you always had, or is it conscious a little bit, or is it a little bit subconscious?
Yeah, I kind of really, when I started throwing my sliders in my freshman year of college and then going into my after that is what it is now. But yeah, I mean, I feel like I could manipulate a little bit, though it's slower, though it's harder, just different counts and so whatnot.
How's that house out there in Arizona? Ryan described it as pretty cool experience, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's nice. Got a pool outside, got a basketball goal, and, you know, just go hang out outside during the days. I don't have to go to the games with Connor McCullough. He's outside right now, but yeah, we're just been hanging out.
I guess, like, in an ideal season, you're maybe just finishing pitching last week at the end of the playoffs, but is there anything different that comes from having your schedule go a little bit deeper in the year as far as what you do in the off season, or, you know, how you prepare for spring training?
Yeah, you know, definitely a little bit different, just like the timeline and everything. But, you know, I'm going to talk with my guys I work with this past off season, pitching and just the weight training and everything, and kind of build up a plan for this coming season.
So there you go, the 21-year-old lefty who hopefully, maybe if things go well, we may actually see on the South Side during the 2026 season. Hey, I'm not even going to rule out the possibility that if Hagan Smith was absolutely dominant, I think while it might be a small chance, I don't think it's something that you could completely rule out the possibility that he could actually break camp with the White Sox starting rotation. And I think the same holds true for Noah Schultz as well. Although, again, I would expect both to begin the year in AAA. And again, though, with hopefully, if all things go well, a very early arrival to help bolster the White Sox starting rotation. I think they both internally are probably part of the White Sox plans in the 2026 season, which is why I'll go back to what we started with when we began White Sox Weekly here today, and that is that you need to sign a veteran or two to plug into the rotation, but also be mindful of the probability that both Hagan Smith and Noah Schultz at some points will be breaking through in the White Sox rotation in the 2026 season. That is going to do it for this edition of White Sox Weekly. I am Jeff Meller. As always, I want to say thank you very much to our guest, Jesse Rogers, joining me earlier today as he covered the general manager's meetings in Las Vegas. And fresh back from his couple days in Vegas, was good to give us all the information that he did. And, of course, the executive producer of White Sox Baseball, which is Brendan Riley, for putting this show together. Thanks so much for listening. We will talk to you again next week right here on the home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000.